This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Welcome back to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM. Here in the middle of football season, but for me, basketball is life, and we have taken the show on the road to Charlotte for ACC tip-off. Joining us right now from Wake Forest, Coach Steve Forbes. What's up, Coach?
I'm good. You just said basketball is life. I thought that Ted Lasso was soccer is life. football is life. Danny.
For me, sports is life. It's just I love competition. Like, I watch chess. It doesn't matter.
Wow. Oh, wow. You're good. Good.
How are you doing, Coach?
I'm good. You know, busy week. I've been in Indianapolis with some men's basketball oversight NCAA committee meetings and just got back and now doing this and practicing.
Yeah. Why don't we start with you telling us a little about the guys you brought with you here today and why?
Yeah, you know, Trey Spillers is a returning starter for us. A really good player, athletic, plays so hard, could score around the basket, rebounds. It's kind of a close to it like a double-double guy, you know, a really good defender, high character. So looking forward to him having a great year. Also, you know, Makai Mason, transfer from Washington. Older, senior, great size. I think he's got like a +6, +7 wingspan.
Wow.
Maybe even bigger. I don't. Can really shoot the three. Good defender. Handles it. A guy that I think you know is going to be a really good player for us. Actually, he's got a +7 wingspan. And then Nate Calmeese averaged 15 a game last year at Washington State. You know, all those football fans are mad. They think because we got Jake Dickert now, I got their point guard. We thought we had some issue with Washington State. We don't. Just kind of happened that way. Fast, athletic, shoots it. Kind of in the same mold as some guys, you know, we've had in the past. A Ty Appleby, you know, Hunter Salas, those kind of guys. And so I thought, you know, those guys have a chance to have really good years.
Coach, like I said, I'm a huge basketball fan, and you're a basketball lifer. How would you describe your basketball journey?
Oh, the road less traveled. Gravel roads to tobacco road. I mean, you think about it. I went from 9 years in junior college in Iowa and Kansas to Idaho to Louisiana Tech to Illinois State to Texas A&M. Then I went to Tennessee. Then I went back to junior college in Florida, and then I go to Wichita State for a couple of years. And at the age of 50, I get my first Division I head job at East Tennessee State. Now I'm here at 55, I'm the head coach at Wake Forest. So I wouldn't change my path for anything, but my journey's probably not the same as most people.
Right. I love a coach that has to work his way up. What did you learn about basketball when you were at East Tennessee State?
You know, I had been in it so long. I think one thing about roster construction is it try to be as old and athletic as you can be. And I haven't always been able to do that at Wake. I do think we're a lot more athletic this year. You know, just off the top of my head, I would say that's probably one thing, just being at East Tennessee State, because most of the time in the league, we were probably the older, more athletic team. Us, maybe Greensboro, Wes Miller. You know, Mike Young was in the league. I mean, gosh, we had, you know, Coach Paris down there in South Carolina. We had this unbelievable league. I'm forgetting people. You know, Matt McCall went to UMass out of the league. Nico Medved's the head coach of Minnesota. I mean,
yeah.
Come on, man. I mean, it was a freaking training ground. So, I mean, you learn a lot on your feet when you have to coach, you know, against guys that are that good.
Yeah, and it feels like with this era right now of college basketball, you need older guys. You cannot win anymore, it feels like, with a bunch of freshmen.
You can. I mean, John did it. I mean, you know, if you got
number one seeds.
Yeah, and you got, you know, Khan, too, and the big kid, Malouk. I mean, you could do it, but it's harder mm-hmm. to do that because there's only a certain amount of those guys, and so you have a better chance being older, you know. And so we've got a pretty good balance. I mean, really, truthfully, we only have three seniors: Makai, Nate, and Trey. Mm-hmm. But you know, we got some juniors and sophomores that have been through it too, and so. You got to try to have some type of continuity in your team, too, so you're not just trying to recruit, you know, 10 new guys every year, too. And so there's a balance, there's a mix to it that you got to have to put together a good roster.
Here with Coach Steve Forbes from Wake Forest, you've seen it all. And how much does the college game now resemble pro?
You know, style of play, I think we always kind of try to emulate, you know, maybe what's above us, like high school coaches do. I think a lot of threes. You know, there's times I watch NBA games, I'm like, why don't you drive the ball to the basket? Why don't you post up?
Yeah.
That's the old school in me. So, I mean, as far as the style of play, the switching, you know, they switch everything. We see more of that now. You know, then if you have to look at getting paid, right? I mean, they have collective bargaining. You know, they have a salary cap. We have, you know, we have rev share and NIL. And so, you know, we're all kind of dealing with different – with paying players, you know. And so the locker room's different maybe than – maybe more resembles the NBA than it ever did as far as, you know, certain people making certain amounts of money and some people not. And so I think there's lots of some similarities. It's a different level. I mean, they got the better players. there's some resemblance, yeah.
Coach Steve Forbes with us here from Wake. College basketball season every year comes with the highs and the lows.
Yep.
How frustrating was Selection Sunday last year?
It's always – look, every Sunday – every Selection Sunday is frustrating when you don't make it, right? And we've been a team that obviously has been on a bubble probably about three of the last 4 years and just have had some really tough late losses we could not overcome. And so I take full responsibility for that. And, it's a hard feeling because I know how exhilarating – Selection Sunday is when your name is called, and I want that more than anything, not for me, for our players and for our fans. And so you know, it's always there, but it's not something you can, you know, sit here and wallow about every day either, because that gets in your way, man. You know what the ultimate goal is, and you just go about your work every day and try to get there.
Coach, it feels like every year around this time, there is a conversation about expanding the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
My opinion and my position is I want more coaching longevity. I hate that coaches get judged on what happens in March and not everything before that. So for that reason, I am for expansion.
Right.
How about you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And let me say this. I just, you know, when I first got on here, I told you I just came from Indy. I'm on the Men's Basketball Oversight Committee. So if there is tournament expansion, then that proposal will go in front of the committee that I'm on, and we'll have to approve it, and then it'll have to go to the administrative committee to be approved. Now, if it comes in front of us, which it has not yet, so you know, I hear people out here saying, "Well, this is going to happen." I don't know, because I'm on the committee and it's not been put in front of me.
Right.
That doesn't mean that it won't. And what I'm going to tell you is Dan Gavitt and his committee are the smartest people in the room. And if they put forth a proposal that they believe in, then it's going to be a dang good one. And it's going to be based on the cost, the logistics, and making sure the tournament still looks the same as it's always looked. Now, why am I for it? Because of opportunity. I understand what you're saying about coaches. I look at it from the lens of the faces of those players on Selection Sunday. It's an indescribable feeling for them. It's a once-in-a-lifetime moment. So who could ever be against 40, 50, I don't know, 60 kids getting that opportunity? I don't understand why there'd be any pushback to that. The tournament's not going to change. People are going to watch it. People are still going to gamble. It's going to be there. And so I am for it. Kudos to you for being for it. But I don't know if that'll ever happen. But when it does, if that proposal comes, it'll come in front of our committee first. And if Dan Gavitt and his committee put it in front of me, I'm voting for it.
It is such a marathon of a college basketball season. How do you keep your players focused from non-conference to conference and then conference tournaments?
I think you got to kind of break it up like you just said in segments, right? Uh-huh. Like right now, you know, we got through the summer, and then we had these 4 weeks of fall workouts before real, you know, quote-unquote regular practice. Now we got these 30 practices, right? And so that's kind of how I do it. So then we got a couple scrimmages coming up or exhibition game. Then we get non-conference. So you try to, you know, you look at that as it okay, we're going to try to put these wins in the bank. So we're playing 13 games. And then we get to the league. Now we got to go for that and then the postseason. I think you just, you got to put it out. You got to break it up, right, and set goals.
Right.
Instead of just saying, well, we're going to play the season now. I mean, it's a marathon. Think about this. We started practice in early June. Today, or we didn't practice today. So Monday was our 52nd practice since June. That's a long time.
Yeah.
And so you gotta find some ways to motivate them and break it up and have some incentive for them about, you know, what the season's going to look like.
Yeah. And then lastly, like for you personally, how do you keep the energy of the fact that, all right, so practice June, all right, game October, November, March, and then the season ends, but there's no off season anymore.
There's not.
Yeah.
Trying to work on that, you know, and the hard part is because of the transfer portal, there's so much more recruiting in the spring. It's my 37th year, right? There's always kind of been a pace to my job. Usually when the players went home after graduation in May, eat JUCO or Division I, wherever I was at, you had May, most of May. And there was a time you couldn't coach them in the summer. So you had June and July too. But now, that transfer portal, you're recruiting all the way up until June. Mm-hmm. And then summer school starts again and they're back. And then you have, at the high major level, you have a recruiting evaluation period in May. You have three in June, two in July, and coaching your team. So we're going to have to try to find some balance for not just the old guys, but to keep the younger guys and the really good coaches, young coaches, to stay in the game who have young families. Like, my kids are growing up. But it's a lot, man. Like, it just never stops. And I get it. You know, it's a high-pressure job. But I'm not saying that. There just has to be, at some point, some common sense. And where we find that probably is it in the end of May and maybe the 1st of August. And that's it in this business.
Coach, great stuff. Really appreciate you joining me.
Always a pleasure.
That's Coach Steve Forbes at Wake. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Welcome back to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM, broadcasting live from Charlotte, North Carolina for ACC tip-off. And time to catch up with our friend from 99.9 The Fan, Dennis Cox. He is the host of Panthers Playbook as we go around the NFL here on AWOD Radio with NFL hits.
Every regular season matchup, every head coach on the hot seat, the hit stories in the NFL. NFL hits on AWOD Radio.
And we are going to focus in on your division inside of the NFC, the NFC South. Tampa Bay is on top four with four wins, one loss, and feels like every year you could predict them to be towards the top of the standings there. And let's start there with Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's playing at a level right now which is elite.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I think the thing that we understate with or forget about with Baker Mayfield, that he was the number one overall pick. And I know some of the years in Cleveland were a little bit rough, but he also had to deal with, like, Freddie Kitchens and some different turnover and stuff there. But overall, he played pretty decently in Cleveland, just got beat up a little bit. But honestly, I think since he got to spend that little bit of time with Sean McVay after he was here in Carolina for a little bit, and, you know, they demoted him, and then he eventually got released and all that kind of stuff, he got to spend that little bit of time with Sean McVay, and I think that just kind of revamped him a little bit. I think he just got to learn under, obviously, one of the best coaches, former Washington Commanders assistant coach and everything. I think that's really what revitalized him, but, man, that offense is humming. And they've also done a good job of putting great players around him. They've done, because obviously Mike Evans has been there for a long time, but Emeka Ibuka's tearing it up as a rookie out of Ohio State. I mean, that's also, you know, Bucky Irving, even though he's been nicked up a little bit. It's just, or Rashad White, they have a bunch of good guys, and they've also drafted well with their offensive line. Graham Barton out of Duke has been able to play both left tackle and center at a high level for them at different points this year. Tristan Wirfs is a fantastic offensive lineman, and they've been able to handle the injuries that he's dealt with as well. Yeah, Baker's playing at a super high level, and I think also as well we forget that Baker has a little bit of that bleep you in him.
Yeah,
and it's paying off. Like, he really does have, like, I don't give a bleep what you think, and it's working for him right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, and you mentioned, though, that stop in L.A. with Sean McVay did feel like it kind of re-energized him.
Yeah.
And got him going, and then it's all about opportunity after that. With Atlanta, what did you expect from the Falcons this year? Because I expected a big leap forward for Michael Penix, and I haven't seen that.
No, we didn't. So I was here at the game in Charlotte when Atlanta came into town, and Michael Penix was just – he was bad. That's all it was. He was just bad. But I had to remind myself is that even though he's an older quarterback because he spent 6 years in college, in terms of NFL experience, that when he was here in Charlotte, that game, if I remember correctly, was just his sixth start in the NFL. But I think we are expecting with Penix in Atlanta, with all the good skill guys that are around him, with Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier is a 1-2 punch, and then you have Kyle Pitts, you have Drake London, even some other guys like Ray McCloud, Darnell Mooney, like, it's a pretty good core of skill guys around him. You would anticipate that skill group would help elevate him, where he doesn't have to do a whole lot. But remember here against Carolina, they were just he actually is what the offense for Atlanta is what lost them that game. They lost 30-0 here to Carolina.
Right.
30-0. And so much of that was, it's not like Carolina offensively lit it up. Carolina got an early touchdown on their opening drive, and they didn't score an offensive touchdown again until the fourth quarter, which was after a Michael Penix interception put Carolina at the 30-yard line. Their defense actually was relatively tough to go against in that game against Carolina. But because they've done so much to revamp the front end of that defense, James Pierce Jr., Jalen Walker, two first-round picks that they've added along that front seven, that I think that their defense was actually much improved, especially under a defensive head coach and Raheem Morris. But their offense is just completely underwhelming. I know they just had a bye week this past week, so hopefully it's a chance for them just to kind of reset, which is weird because I know they went up and beat Washington, which was kind of blew my mind. But I know Washington was playing without Jaden Daniels in that game.
I think that game was more like it was like a revenge game because they should have beaten us the year before.
They should have.
Right.
They should have. But I think a bye week came at the right time for them because it's like, okay, hold on, they're 2-2. Let's take a deep breath. Let's kind of reevaluate and go forward. So, but I don't know. It's just that team is hit and miss, which is also not surprising that the last few years with Arthur Smith, before obviously Raheem Morris took over last year. I mean, even last year as well, they were an 8-win team. That's basically what they are. They're a 500 team. That's
yeah.
what they are.
Joined by Dennis Cox from Panthers Playbook. Follow him on Twitter at TheFanRookie. We're going around the NFC South. We'll save the Panthers for last, the best for last.
Of course.
New Orleans, we had a bit on our show. My producer was picking against New Orleans every week in Survivor.
Okay.
And then they played the Giants, and he got screwed.
There you go. There you go. What the, I don't know what to make. Because Spencer Rattler, I don't feel, is a long-term solution there.
No. But that was his first win. He's now 1-10.
Yeah, but then they also drafted Tyler Shuck out of Louisville in the second round, which is like, well, wait a second. Why did you spend a second-round pick on a 25-year-old quarterback with a massive injury history if you're just going to start Spencer Rattler? That feels like a wasted pick because it doesn't feel like either of those guys is going to be a long-term solution at quarterback. I don't know where they're going. This is also their roster is a byproduct of years of pushing back salary cap money. So when you tack on all these void years, this is actually something I'm cautious a bit when it comes to Washington, to kind of tie it back in here with your fan base, is that with so many contracts that they were having, where they were like, all right, let's just add these void years to contracts so we can spread out the cap hit over all these seasons. Well, eventually that bill comes due. And that's what the Saints are facing right now. All these guys that they have for so long because they felt like they could still win. This is, you know, after Sean Payton's still there, after Drew Brees was gone, they kept pushing all this money down the road. Then all of a sudden it's like, well, we can't push it down any further because these guys are no longer on the roster, so we can't add void years to guys who aren't here. So then now their salary cap situation is in a terrible spot. But then that puts them in a position where you have to fill with minimum contract free agent veterans or a bunch of guys on rookie deals. And that's where they are, and especially undrafted rookies and things along those lines. So that's kind of where their franchise is right now. And it's just, I mean, I really am excited to see what Kellen Moore can do. I know a lot of, you know, Washington fans saw him up close and personal last year as he was the offensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles. But I think Moore can eventually get that offense going in the long term. He just doesn't have, outside of Alvin Kamara, you got nothing to work with
right.
A whole lot there. I will say, actually, I take that back. Chris Olave and
Rashid Shaheed can hit deep balls, but they're not number ones, though.
I think Olave can be.
Uh-huh.
The problem with his is just he's had the concussions. That's really the big thing as well. I just feel like he's one bad hit away from it just all being over for him. So I will retract that in a little sense that they don't have anybody to work with, because Kamara could still get it done. He's not what he used to be. But Olave and Shaheed are still good receivers. They still are, but they just don't have a whole lot going for them.
Yeah, I think it's a talent issue. I mean,
I don't really
know any tight end on their roster.
No.
Jawan Johnson.
I mean, who's like a threat on their defense? Just really don't see it. And the reason why I bring up their salary cap and how it relates to Washington is because the way Washington this offseason brought in a lot of veteran guys to put around Jaden Daniels, you know, whether, or even last year, they would go trade for Marcus Lattimore. This offseason, go get Deebo Samuel, I mean, Zach Ertz, whatever it might be. Eventually, when Jaden Daniels has to get paid, then you're going to have to supply that with, you know, guys under rookie contracts in order to make things work.
Yeah. No, that's why I'm in a win now mode, because it's just going to be difficult once Jaden gets the big bag of money, which is going to be an insanely big bag. Carolina now 2-3 after a win over the Miami Dolphins. I'll ask you two quick questions. Number one, is Bryce Young the guy?
Right now, no. No. He's not. He hasn't. Here's the thing about with Bryce. Is that there's too much inconsistency. The fact that you are asking me that question already says the answer is no. Because it's not definitive. It's not like what you see with even what you saw last year, Drake May, up in New England. Because Drake May last year was on a terrible roster under Gerard Mayo, first-year head coach. But you're like, man, that's a talented quarterback just on a bad football team.
Yeah.
And then you see it this year. Hey, there's still a lot of issues. And, you know, former, you know, Commander Antonio Gibson now has an ACL injury done for the year. Ramondre Stevenson seems to, you know, not be able to hold on to the football for whatever reason. But you're like, man, that dude really can ball. You don't see that with Bryce Young. I know a lot of people will look back at this game this past Sunday where they came back against the Miami Dolphins. First of all, it's the Miami Dolphins. Which was basically, honestly, being there at the game, sitting in the press box, my co-host on Panthers Playbook, Chris Lee, said to me, the Panthers are just playing the Panthers. I mean, that's really what it is. The Panthers are just playing the Panthers against a good team. Bryce Young with two turnovers on the first two drives of the game. That's seven turnovers this season.
Yeah.
Seven. And it's not good enough. I mean, against Miami, it didn't come back to bite them. Granted, Miami did score 14 points on those two turnovers, and they're down 17-0. If you're playing a better team, you don't come back and win that game. Here's something to keep in mind about when it comes to the Panthers offense. I don't know if this is just also the limitations of Dave Canales, their head coach, who's also the play caller, Bryce Young, the combination thereof, is that they only have one touchdown this season that's gone more than 7 yards. One. And it was week one against Jacksonville. It was like a little swing route check down to Chuba Hubbard, the running back, and he went over 20 yards for a touchdown. Every other touchdown has been 7 yards or less.
If you can't create explosive plays, you can't win.
That's the big problem. They don't get enough explosives. Now, Rico Dowdle popped off for a couple of big runs this past game, which was great to see. But you can't anticipate that your number two running back in Rico Dowdle, who was a starter last year in Dallas, don't get me wrong. But you can't anticipate that your starting running back is going to go for 206 yards and pop off a 53-yard run and a 43-yard run. And even this season as well, they only have one offensive touchdown drive that is under 8 plays. That's it. Everything has been a grind. I referenced a little bit ago about the game against Atlanta where they won 30-0. Their second offensive touchdown, which was a Rico Dowdle 1-yard touchdown run, they got the ball at the Atlanta 30-yard line after an interception. It took them 9 plays to go 30 yards. In a game, that's the thing.
How does that even work with first downs?
Barely. I say exactly. You're grinding out. But they scored on a fourth down. They scored on fourth and goal from the one. So they don't have a ton of explosives, and I think that goes to show you some of the limitations that Bryce has both physically, because Bryce doesn't have an elite arm. It's good, but even Kyler Murray's a smaller guy, has a way better arm. Jaden Daniels has a better arm. Bryce can move pretty well. He's actually pretty good at, when you actually roll the pocket and move him, or use him on bootlegs and play action, he's actually pretty good at throwing on the run. But he doesn't have elite speed, and he doesn't have an elite size where you have to worry about him as a runner like you do with Josh Allen, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, or some of these other guys, Lamar Jackson. He doesn't have that. So he doesn't have elite size. He doesn't have an elite arm. He doesn't have elite running ability. So if he's not and throwing with anticipation and processing everything during the play, he doesn't have a physical trick to lean on.
Yeah.
That's the biggest limitation with him.
I think they were hoping his speed would be a little bit more of a factor.
Well, he doesn't have the size.
Yeah.
He's 5'10", buck 90, buck 85. I've stood next to him. I'm 5'10". We see it eye to eye.
Right.
And he's not that big of a guy. He's built like a smaller wide receiver. Or like a smaller corner. That's what he's built like. So you're not going to be able to run him a whole lot, because I just don't think he can physically take the pounding. Plus, he just fumbles the ball a lot. I mean, gosh, this past weekend against Miami, he tried to pump fake Bradley Chubb and just dropped the ball. Like, he was trying to, like, you know, pump fake. He just dropped it against the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're moving the ball down the field in a two-minute situation late in the first half. Just doesn't protect the football as he gets hit going down to the ground, loses the ball, takes him out. Not only were they in field goal range, but then Jacksonville goes down and scores. So it's just the turnovers are a bad thing. I know, he made some great throws this past Sunday against Miami, but Miami's defense doesn't have a whole lot going for it. But he threw 2 touchdown passes, but he also had 2 turnovers that led to touchdowns for Miami. At best, that's a net negative, a net zero. At best, he only has 1 game this season where he's thrown for over 200 yards. 1. And that was against Arizona in week 2, where he coughed up the ball a lot early, and Arizona was playing soft.
Yeah.
Like, Arizona was playing soft on defense, but then sure enough, in a 2-minute drive situation at the end of the game, where after Carolina gets an onside kick, they have a chance to move the ball down the field and go for a potential game-winning score in a game that they had no business being in. And then Arizona decided to ramp up the pressure again. And then the only way that drive ever extended was because of a couple of defensive penalties against Arizona. But he was 0-for-6 passing on a 2-minute drive late in the game. So when it was really there for it, it just wasn't there. It's just he's too inconsistent of a player. Unless he starts just truly ramping things up, I don't see how you can sign him to a contract extension at the end of this year. I just don't see how you can make that decision if you're a franchise.
For more, check out Panthers Playbook. That's Dennis Cox at The Fan Rookie on Twitter. Thanks for stopping by, dude.
Anytime.
You're listening to AWOD Radio. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AWOD Radio here on the new sports radio 910 The Fan. Now at 105.1 FM, live from Radio Row here in Charlotte, North Carolina for the ACC tip-off. Joining us right now, the head coach at Pitt, Coach Jeff Capel. What's going on, Coach?
What's up, man? How's it going?
I'm doing good. And, you know, I want to start with this. How much more is this what you've envisioned in terms of the roster that you want at Pitt?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about our roster. You know, when the season was over last year, obviously we were incredibly disappointed. You know, no one was more disappointed than us as a coaching staff. The season did not end the way that we thought that it would. Certainly the way we anticipated, especially how we started. And we knew right away that there were some changes that we needed to make. And one of the biggest things that I felt like that we needed to change was that we needed to become tougher and more physical. I didn't think we did a good job of that in January and February and early March, the few games we played in March of last season. And so we really tried to hone in on that. We tried to get guys from the portal that come from winning, and we felt like that impacted winning. I thought we succeeded with that. And then when you look at our freshmen, there's a level of physicality that they're walking in the door with, where they're able to, we think and hope, be able to contribute right away.
I love that answer because it is such a marathon season. Yep. You can have success in the out of conference, but you got to be able to keep it up when you get in conference. I mean, that's got to be so difficult as a coach to see your team have early success and then maybe get overconfident or maybe just playing too tough of a schedule, you know?
Yeah, you know, I thought for us last year was like a weird year. We were really good early. You know, we lost to Wisconsin in the championship of the tournament in West Virginia. Close game throughout. We got blitzed by Mississippi State, but we had some really good wins against a good West Virginia team. We beat Ohio State at Ohio State. And, you know, we challenged ourselves with our schedule in the non-conference. We had an injury to a kid that was really significant when Damian Dunn got hurt. When he got hurt the first time, you know, at the time he was our third leading scorer, but he was our best shooter, our best perimeter defender. He was second in assist. But what he gave us was an edge. And he gave us depth because we could play different lineups. When he went out, it changed everything. And, you know, he came back, tried to play. We were actually playing at North Carolina, and he was starting to be Dame again. He was playing really, really well. And then in that game, he fractured his elbow and was out for the rest of the season. And we were never able to recover from that. And we didn't have the quality depth that we needed. Some mistakes that I made. And so, again, you learn from it. It was disappointing. It was very difficult. I feel for everyone involved, the players on that team, the fans, everyone. But hopefully, you know, some of the changes that we made, hopefully we can correct that.
Joined by Coach Jeff Capel here at Pitt. I'm Adam Epstein. This is A-Wide Radio here on Richmond's home for the most college basketball talk in town. And I got to mention that. I mean, how about the influx of former VCU coaches into the ACC? You've been here, but now welcome in Will Wade and Ryan Odom. How wild is that?
It's crazy, but it's a testament to VCU and, you know, that program there. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, we also play Penn State this year. So Mike Rhodes, but it's a testament to the program at VCU, and you know all of us have talked at different times and talk about our experience at VCU and how much we loved it there and how much the place meant to all of us, and it's a very, very special place.
Coach, what have you learned about yourself as a coach since you took over at Pitt here?
Yeah, this experience has been really interesting. You know, I became a head coach at a really young age. I was 27 when I got the job at VCU. Kind of had instant success. Became a head coach at a high major program in Oklahoma at 31. Kind of had instant success. And then things fell off the rails there. This has been more of a challenge because success didn't happen right away. It took a while. And it wasn't until year five that we finally broke through. Year six, you know, I thought we were really good. We finished in the top four. Now, we didn't make the tournament. I thought we got screwed there, but it happens. And so I've learned about patience, perseverance. You know, I've learned about, you know, learning who's with you and who's not. I was able to find that out pretty early here at Pitt, that who's really in our corner, not just when you're winning, like who's really with you. And I really am grateful for those relationships even more. But just, man, I've grown so much from that 27-year-old at VCU that didn't really know what the heck I was doing and kind of learning on the fly. And, you know, you just take everything one day at a time and you try to get better. You pour into these guys and try to help them get better and see what happens.
Coach, I've been a fan since you were at VCU, and I've loved watching your career, and personally, I think you've been screwed the last 3 years. So what's it going to take to dance this year?
Well, we got to take care of our part, and what I mean by that, we have to take care of our part at Pitt, the ACC, as a league. We have to take care of our part in doing our part in non-conference. We have to win. We didn't do that last year. the years before, I think our league got screwed. We didn't get screwed last year. You know, we screwed ourselves as a league from our performance in the non-conference as a league. We have to be better there. And if we do that, then the narrative will go back to this being the best basketball conference.
Coach, always appreciate the time. Thank you so much, and good luck this
season.
Appreciate
it, man.
Coach Jeff Capel at Pitt. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome back to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM. Richmond's home for the most college basketball talk in town. We've taken the show on the road to Charlotte for ACC tip-off, and joining us right now, the head coach at NC State, Will Wade. What's up, Coach?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing doing great so far.
Yeah, absolutely. You enjoying NC State?
It's been fun. We hadn't lost yet, so everybody's still excited. everybody's still ready to go, Adam. So, yeah, we're doing well.
That's awesome to hear. So I want to start with how great of a season you had last year and the experience of all of your guys, even your manager, getting all that attention. How cool was that, man?
Just tremendous. I mean, look, we were at a McNeese State is a small regional university who serves a 5-parish area in southwest Louisiana. And, you know, we were able to make, you know, we'll coach a lot of different, hopefully a long time from now. But we were able to make an impact there. I don't know we'll ever make somewhere else. The enrollment's up, you know, 13%. Applications are up. There's all sorts of just, I mean, it's changed the face of that university. And that's, you know, with the president and the athletic director and then what we were able to do with their investment into men's basketball. So it was just, you know, winning the NCAA tournament game and having, you know, Amir go viral and all of that's just life-changing for that community of Lake Charles who's been suffered through hurricanes and just kind of forgotten. It's just life-changing for the area, for the university, for everybody involved. And so as long as I coach, I don't know if we'll ever make an impact like we did there or have the, you know, just have the synergy with the community like we did there. And just being able to win that first NCAA tournament game was just indescribable and just a very, very proud moment, you know, as a coach.
I love to hear that, and it came against an ACC opponent. Now you're here in the ACC, and I'll tell you, I've been covering this conference here since I got the job in 2022, and the mood has changed because I feel like it's, hey, coaches need to get the message that we need to improve in the non-conference to make this the premier college basketball conference once again.
Yeah, I mean, look, we got to win non-conference games. By the time you get in conference play, your numbers are pretty much set, and so you're trying to have everybody have really good non-conference play so that when you get in conference play, you don't have negative games, so to speak, games that can only hurt you and not help you. And what's happened is the ACC, we haven't won enough non-conference games. And so you have teams that are really good teams that, you know, come on in conference play or get the hang of things in conference play, and they don't, they don't get the benefit because they upset people. And they may have struggled in non-conference, and they come into conference play, they upset people, and it's a quad three or quad four loss. You've got to get every game in conference to where it's an additive game, which means it's a quad two or quad one game. And you can sprinkle in a quad three, and you just got to make sure you don't lose. You know, you don't lose at home to a quad three. But we've had quad fours, we've had quad threes in this league, and you can't do that. And, you know, Wake Forest was on track to go to the NCAA tournament last year, got beat at home by Virginia, who Virginia started playing better late after the coaching change and everything that went on. And so that's the sort of stuff that just kills you as a league. And we've got to be better with that and winning our non-conference games to where everything in conference is a bonus and additive and doesn't hurt us.
Joined by NC State head coach Will Wade, what have you learned about yourself in your basketball journey?
You know, it's been it was a quick rise and a quick fall. And so now you're kind of pick the pieces up and build back. And so certainly think as a person, you change. Your experiences shape you. Your experiences help change you and help move you, hopefully move you forward and move you for the better. And so, I wouldn't trade anything that we've been through. We talked about McNeese. If I hadn't gotten fired at LSU, I wouldn't have had the experience that we had at McNeese, which really was a fulfilling experience. And so I think that there's good with every bad, and I'm very appreciative of everything that we've been through, and hopefully that it'll make me a better person and a better coach at NC State.
Well, Coach, you can say that, but I don't think you ever fell off. We always knew that you could coach, and you just needed to get another opportunity, and you've certainly made the most of it. Now you land in the ACC. How exciting is this?
It's exciting. I mean, ACC is the premier basketball conference in the country, and so we're really, really excited to be a part of it. Now it's our job to make NC State relevant within this within this conference and within this group. And so hopefully that's our task this year, and hopefully we can get it done.
So, Coach, we sat down with Jeff Capel. We'll have Ryan Odom. We're here with you now. How do you look back on your time in Richmond?
Incredible. I was there for 4 years as an assistant, 2 years as the head coach. We're playing them this year. I actually talked to Ed, the AD, the other night.
I'll be there.
For a while. Yeah, we're playing them this year in a home-and-home. I'm the only one that would schedule them in a home-and-home, I guess, after my contract was up with it. But, I mean, look, I didn't fully appreciate VCU when I was there as a head coach. As an assistant, I did appreciate everything. When I was as a head coach, I was young. It's just move. You know, looking back, I should have never left. I'm reflective enough to admit that I should have stayed a while longer. I think we had something really going, but at the time I didn't realize it. I was always let's go to the next big thing. And VCU has incredible fans, incredible administrative support, incredible facilities. There's everything that you need there to win at a high level, and that's why a dumbass like me can win there, and they just change the coaches out and everybody keeps winning. So but it's an incredible place, incredible job. Now I know it won't be real nice when we go back next year. They won't be real happy to see me, but we've got some really good friends of ours, my wife and I, that are still in Richmond, and I know a lot of them are coming to the game when we play VCU. But incredible place, and their basketball program is going to keep on moving with Coach Martelli.
Yeah, I mean, I know the fan base would wish that they had one coach that would stay there for all the time, but you see everybody go on and have the success, and now you got the influx of former VCU coaches in the ACC. I mean, what does that say about the program?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the program makes the coaches more than the coaches make the program. I think that's something that people get twisted about VCU. I said when I got the job, like, I've been handed the keys to Ferrari. I just got to drive it fast and not put it in the ditch, which hopefully we did. But I think that the program is just so set up to win with the support and with everything that goes into it. And like I said, I didn't appreciate that. I never dreamed that, when I took an SEC job that there'd be an A-10 school that had more than the SEC school had in a lot of respects. And so I just, I didn't do my research, and I was just boom, 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 moving quick. But I think that VCU is just a tremendous place, and it just shows how good of coaches, have been there, and how everybody's wanted that job because of the infrastructure that they have. And I think that it shows that ACC schools, I use a lot of the same infrastructure. Sometimes I'm telling our people, hey, we had this at VCU, we need this here. And so we try to use a lot of that same infrastructure as we move forward.
Here with NC State head coach Will Wade, I want to get your take on the future of college basketball. Tournament expansion. I am very much for it because I think it will lead to more coaching longevity. I just hate that these coaches like yourself get judged on March rather than all the work you put in before then. Do you want expansion?
I'm against it.
Oh, all right, Coach.
I'm against it.
You want to make it harder?
I like it where it is.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think I understand your point, but I think if they expand the tournament, I think the target's going to move. I don't think making the tournament's going to be good enough anymore as a coach. It's going to be advancing and get. But to me, you have more control over making. I mean, look, if I'm at NC State and I can't make the NCAA tournament every 3 years, they should fire me. That's the way I look at it. Like, if I'm at a high major school and I can't make the NCAA tournament every 3 years, you know, they should fire me. So, you know, I think that the tournament's fine how it is. I don't like adding, you know, these 12 extra game or these 12 games and or the last 12 teams and the last 12 AQs. And so I just think that it's in a good place, and I think it's there's going to be some unintended consequences with the expansion where you're going to see way more like just making the tournament's not good enough. You got to make it, and it, look, it's hard to win a neutral court game. I think that's going to be. I think people are underestimating some of the change that'll come with that.
Yeah, I mean, you're so right. I don't want it to be, all right, we expand, and then we're raising the rim and making it harder for coaches that, oh, well, you haven't made a Sweet 16 run. That's
correct.
That's
I think that's what it's going to turn into.
Yeah. From your experiences, and you've had success in the tournament, what does it look like? What does it take to win, like you said, these neutral games in an NCAA tournament?
Well, a lot of it in the tournament's your draw. I mean, a lot of it's just matchups and draw and having your guys, you know, healthy and in the right frame of mind as they get to the tournament. There's just a lot of different factors that go into it when you get there and spending time with folks and making sure that everybody's doing, you know, what they need to do and playing their best at that time, because it's a long season. It's at the end of the season. Guys can be worn down. You got to make sure you're rejuvenated and ready to roll.
How much do you still talk to Coach Smart, Coach Rhodes, and the rest of those guys?
Yeah, we're all still in contact, and so we had a great staff led by Coach Smart, who's a great leader, and we see each other on the road and talk shop and swap stories.
I love to hear that. So what's interesting at NC State is, I mean, 2 years ago they were there, right? And now you get the keys to the franchise that has had success recently, and it's just. That's the transfer portal, I guess, right? Is that, like, you can go up and then you can go down so quickly.
Yeah, what we're looking for is some consistency and sustainability. We don't have, you know, we've been up and down, like you said. We've been like the stock market, up, down, up, down. We need consistency. We're in the top half of the ACC, top four of the ACC, competing for national seeds. And then, hey, look, some years, you know, we may make a Final Four, an Elite Eight. Some years we may make the Sweet 16. Some years we may get upset in the first round. But we've got to have... Like, we've got to have, you know, we got to have a dog in the hunt every year. It can't be that once every 4 years you give yourself that opportunity. Four out of every 5 years, we got to be giving ourselves those opportunities. And like I said, one of the years we'll probably advance further than we should. One of the years we'll get upset, and the other 2 years will probably be about where we should be. And so we've got to give ourselves enough cracks at that, and that's what we haven't been able to do.
Here with NC State head coach Will Wade, I got to ask you, because you're at NC State, how much did you look up to Coach Valvano?
You know, he's just a coaching icon, but it's more than, you know, he was a cult of personality.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, he was doing a radio show and coaching.
He was athletic director at a point in time as well. And so he's just been a cult of personality and just a phenomenal coach and somebody who left a major impact on NC State, on NC State basketball, and he's the reason, you know, our program's so well thought of today. A lot of our biggest fans, a lot of our biggest supporters, you know, were growing up and in college during his heyday when we were winning at a high level, and so he's. You know, he's somebody that set the bar really high and showed NC State what we can do and what we can be.
Coach, really appreciate you taking the time to join me. And like I've told you, I'm a big fan because I was at VCU. I was a senior when you took over. I feel like I was one of the guys, the first guys to interview you there and been able to follow your career. And I got to say this before I let you go. My favorite clip is you calling out the former host here, Wes McElroy. It's like on social media. I watch it over and over again. I'm obsessed with it, and I love that you called out a radio host.
Well, Wes's hair is always in perfect gel. Never out of place. So,
well, you could call me out after VCU versus NC State this year. Good luck this season.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to AWOD Radio on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.